Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, as you know, the war in Ukraine took another very dangerous turn last night when Poland was forced to shoot down 19 Russian drones that entered its airspace. It's still unclear if this was an accident or deliberate, but what it does do is increase the perception in Poland and many other countries that Russia is a direct threat to the West. But what exactly is the West? Georgios Varoufakis is the author of The West, The History of an Idea. Georgios, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My sense is that what happened last night with those Russian drones, that while the Poles may have been alarmed by what happened, they probably weren't surprised by what happened, in that they've always felt a threat from Russia as far back as when the Cold War ended.
Oh, gosh. Yes, absolutely. And they've been worried about Russia for centuries. It's a very long-standing story. It's not accidental that Poland spends more per capita of its GDP for defense than any country in NATO at the moment.
Yeah, and there are clear historical reasons for that, but is that also because even during the Cold War period, they might have felt they were kind of forced into that bloc rather than they were ever part of it?
Completely, absolutely. They were what the Czech novelist who lived in Paris at the time, Milan Kundera, he called it the kidnapped West. Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and Poland felt they were the kidnapped West, countries in Central Europe that were part of the West, that with the division of the Cold War were taken to the East politically, whereas culturally they felt always Western. So that is a long-standing feeling, and it goes back to the 19th century also, the revolutions of the Poles, the way they were treated. So it's a long story indeed, and they have always seen themselves and been seen by others further west as the rampart of the West. So what happened is the latest episode in a long story, definitely.
Yeah, though not all the countries in Europe that border Russia would necessarily feel that way, or is that incorrect?
It's not incorrect, but different countries have different reasons why they're worried and different associations with the West. Poland has always seen itself as part of the West because it was Catholic. It's been Catholic for a millennium. So both the Poles themselves, you may remember the man who saved Vienna from the Turks was a Polish man. The Poles never forget that. So it's a particular case of a country that feels strongly about this. And therefore, they are very sensitive to this matter. Yeah.
Yeah. And I suppose the Estonians would feel very strongly that way as well.
Same thing exactly, yes.
Yeah. So in a way, Poland and maybe a few other of those Baltic states were traditionally regarded as kind of a front line against Russia. Has that moved now into Ukraine, that Ukraine now has taken on that role as being the front line representing the West against Russia?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what I think. And it's not accidental, it's not completely surprising if you take the long-term and the long-dure view of the idea of the West since it was first muted in its modern version, in its modern meaning, which is, in my opinion, as of the 1820s with the Greek Revolution and since then. From the beginning, people started seeing the West as a civilization or a culture or a potential alliance with potentially open-ended membership. So although its basis was the old Catholic Europe before the Reformation and after the Reformation, both Catholic and Protestant Europe, Western Christianity, it was from the beginning, if you look at the beginnings, open to expansion or inclusion or enlargement, as the European Union would call it in more recent decades. So from the beginning, people who started theorizing the West, including Greece, although it was Orthodox, and Poland, although it was Slavic, but it was Catholic. So the idea that you can include a country that doesn't necessarily share exactly all the cultural or religious characteristics of the initial West into the West has been there from the beginning. So Ukraine is now part of a redefinition of the West. It's fighting for the West. The West is fighting by proxy in a way. And that's exactly why it's so interesting.
The concept of the West, as you said, it really came to fruition in, you know, the 1820s or so. Was it in part because of the rise of Imperial Russia?
Yes, absolutely. It was fear of Russia. That's my argument in the book, and that's what people seem to be more or less convinced that the West, half of the people will tell you that the West existed since the ancient Greeks, and the other half will tell you that it was it started with the Cold War in the 1940s. Historians and social scientists, meanwhile, will tell you in a kind of almost boring consensus that the West was invented in the 1880s and 1890s for the purposes of British imperialism. All three versions are incorrect. The West, in the way we understand it today, as a combination or alliance of like-minded states, countries, peoples that could form a federation potentially, but at any rate stand together, started being talked of as of the 1820s, increasingly 1830s, became completely explicit as of the 1840s because of fear of Russia. Russia had come to be accepted as part of the European political system since the time of Peter the Great in the early 18th century. But by the Congress of Vienna in 1815 and the creation of the Holy Alliance a couple of shortly afterwards, the Tsar of Russia, Alexander I, put himself and his country not only within Europe, but at the very core, at the very center. He dominated Europe. The expansionism of the Russian Empire with Catherine the Great had been well noticed, of course. So it was an enormous fear from the rest of Europe that Russia was an enormous monolith that was bound to absorb them unless they united. That's led many people to start talking about the West as opposed to Europe, because Europe included Russia.
Right. And you would credit Auguste Comte with essentially coming up with this concept. How did he define the West then?
Yeah, very good question. Obviously, I fear you don't have enough time to hear all the details, but that's salutary because there are many details. But he insisted that the five great nations, as he called them, by which he meant linguistic groups, the English-speaking peoples, the French, the Italians, the Iberian Peninsula, the Germans, by which he meant all the Germanic peoples, including Scandinavia and the Dutch and so on, were, since the time of Charlemagne, so united in their cultural experiences, in their historical experiences, that they should be seen as one unit, one culture, one civilization. And he thought it should be called the West. So this was Catholic and post-Catholic Europe, but now he wanted to define it not in religious terms, but in terms of a more secular alliance of like-minded peoples that are the most advanced part of the world and should be reorganized in a particular way. He called it La République Occidentale, the Western Commonwealth, the Western Republic. And as I said earlier, interestingly, he added two adjuncts, two countries that should be included in the West from the beginning, although they are not part of Charlemagne's Europe, and these were Poland and Greece.
And did he see this as a project to project its influence around the world?
Yes, but in a way that is surprising, because unlike what the consensus of academics will tell you, as I said, that the West was invented to defend imperialism, his project was to abolish empires. So the Western Republic would be a spiritual, cultural, moral unit, but he wanted the secular states to be very small, size of Ireland, Wales, Corsica, and to completely abolish empires of conquest and military engagements and so on. It was a utopian pacifist plan and passionately anti-imperialist. So his plan was that it would reorganize itself. It was the most advanced part of the world. Once the rest of the world saw that the Westerners were not aggressive, but rather benign and peaceful, they would start joining it. So he wanted it to include the whole of humanity when the rest of humanity wanted to join. And then the capital of the Republic would move from Paris to Constantinople, the city between Asia and Europe, and that would be the final capital of humanity. As I said, utopian plan. I'm not in any way trying to revive it, but it's certainly the history of the idea of the West is very different to the accepted orthodoxy among academics.
Yeah. So when we move into the 20th century, did the US see itself as part of the West or always see itself as part of the West?
Exactly. Brilliant question. The United States joined the West last, unlike what people seem to think. It's not the core of the West. It was an offshoot that joined later. The Americans, understandably, they were the first post-colonial nation. They had just waged the revolution against the imperialist English. The last thing they wanted was to be seen as part of one culture with the imperialist, semi-aristocratic, semi-feudal West Europeans. They were a new dispensation, a city in the hill. They were a new thing. And they also had another West, their own shifting frontier. So they would not talk of themselves as part of the West until the very last decades, very end of the 19th century. And the people who talked about America's West were all either Germans, German migrants, or Americans who studied in German universities and came back with the language of the West from Europe. And of course, followers of Auguste Comte, of whom there were many in America's, in the rest of the world. And it was only literally with the First World War that Americans accepted that they were part of the West and they had a role and a leading role under the influence of some remarkable journalists like Walter Lippmann and other authors. But until then, America was at best ambivalent and didn't talk about the West or itself as part of the West. All that changed in the 20th century, of course.
Yeah, and perhaps it's changing again now in that there's a backing off from the idea of the West from the United States, or at least under the current administration.
Yes, yes. But if you, absolutely, although I haven't written off the possibility that Trump will change his mind. As you know, he changes his mind a lot. He changes his rhetoric a lot. If you notice, recently, a few weeks ago, when NATO members agreed to increase defense spending, he said this is a win for Western civilization. So he will use the language, depending on who spoke to him last, clearly, and who wrote his speeches. When he gave a speech in Warsaw, I spent a long section in the penultimate chapter of my book, The West, the History of an Idea, talking about a speech he gave in Warsaw in the summer of 2017, his first term, where he mentioned Western civilization and the West a dozen times. There was a huge debate in the United States about what he meant and why did he use it, whereas he never uses the West. He wants to leave NATO. Well, very obviously he used it because he was speaking to Poles. And as we started earlier, he knew nothing. I suspect, but Stephen Bannon, who had written the speech, knew extremely well that it would go down very well in Poland to talk about the West and Poland and the United States as parts of Western civilization.
From what you're saying, though, even if Trump decides, no, we're not part of the West, like, would you feel the West would still survive as an idea because its birthplace is in Europe?
Yes, exactly. I do think that. The West is terribly important for the Europeans, so whatever people might say, it's too attractive to abandon. But I also think that the United States will, from time to time, go, come back, depending on administrations and so on. But the interests of the United States are also served by the West. So whatever the rhetoric of the current president is, in the long term, I don't see them, the Americans, abandoning their alliance with Western Europe. So I think, current rhetoric apart, I don't see the West as in any danger of disappearing. It's in crisis, but then it's been in crisis since its beginning. There will always be some crisis.
What about Turkey? In that, you know, historically there was a movie that very much wanted to be part of the West when it was formed as a republic, but President Erdogan seems far less keen on that idea, even though that they are members of NATO.
Yeah, exactly. That's a terribly interesting story. I don't know how long you have, but since you're asking, in the scheme of Auguste Comte that we started with, and when the first time somebody started articulating a thorough idea of the West as a program for the future, he was very sympathetic to the Ottoman Empire. He wanted to include it. He was more keen to include the Ottoman Empire than Russia, for example, as the next expansion. So from the beginning, there is this relationship. Turkey has been, the Ottomans have been in Europe for centuries. They are related to our history. In the end, he didn't include it, but he was hoping in the future it would join as well. More recently, and not accidentally perhaps, the leaders of the Young Turks and Kemal Atatürk and the sociologists like Ziya Gökalp and others who were major exponents of Turkey's new orientation towards the West, they were all Comtists or followers of Comte. The leader of the Turkish parliament after the Young Turk Revolution was Ahmet Riza, who was a major Comtist. If you read the Revue Occidentale of the Comtists in Paris, he would have an article every couple of months. So, not perhaps accidentally, the Republic, when it was established, was explicitly keen to join Western civilization. then that was obviously always a little bit of an aspiration more than a reality. But Kemal, as you know, perhaps, I'm sure you know, tried to force his country into Western civilization by abolishing the Islamic dress in universities and many, many other things, changed the alphabet to Latin alphabet. These things don't happen in a day, but in the long term, this was the prospect. Turkey was part of NATO. It joined along with Greece in 1952, 3 years after the creation of NATO. So during the Cold War, Turkey was seen as part of the political West. I think Erdogan now would find it anathema to be part of the West. He has different ambitions, but in the long term, Erdogan may not be there forever. So again, Turkey is a split country that might go either way in the future.
Mm. The reason why the West has survived, more or less, would it be your contention that there's kind of almost a self-correcting mechanism within the West, not by design, almost by accident, but just because it's such a various place?
Exactly. Exactly. What is its greatest weakness is its greatest strength, in a way. You don't have one leader, one decision-making body, one party making decisions, coordinating the economy, as other countries that will not be mentioned do. So perhaps you don't act fast, perhaps you make blunders, perhaps you elect the wrong leader, and so on. But in the long term, because we are democracies, and therefore we change our leaders and reconsider our decisions, and because we are many, we are not one country. The West, as we have been discussing, if America doesn't lead, somebody else will see an opening there. I can see Mr. Macron preparing himself as leader of the West. Germany and France together are making all the right noises on this issue. So because it's not one country, but many leading the so-called West, and because they are democracies and change course when something goes wrong, in the long term, there is this self-correcting mechanism exactly, which is mainly accidental, maybe, mainly history, a result of the history of the West. That means that it has a kind of regenerative possibilities. It has self-criticism ingrained in the system and in the political culture of Western societies, and therefore it can change its course when it goes wrong.
Georgios Varoufakis is professor in history of political thought at Queen Mary University of London and the author of The West, The History of an Idea. Georgios, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.